Hey everyone, welcome into the hours. I'm Mark. We are joined by Claire today. Tyler has the day off. And Claire, excited to talk to you today. We haven't done this in a long time. And as I was prepping for today's episode, I started thinking about the journey of a head coach and how excited we are to be a head coach and how as an assistant coach, we all or most of us desire to be in that seat. And once we are a head coach, we feel like there are so many things that we've wanted to do. And we've all had that thought of when I'm a head coach, I'm going to do it this way. And I think a trap that head coaches can fall into is trying to do everything and thinking that they're responsible for creating the culture, for leading their team and driving the results that you want as a head coach. And a lesson that I learned is as a transformational coach, you're really leading yourself and then leading others. And you want your players to feel invested in the program. So Claire, maybe if you can just speak to kind of your coaching journey, or if you've seen that or felt that like fix it mentality that we've all felt as a head coach.
Yeah, I think honestly, my experience as an assistant coach has really helped me with that because I transfer that where you're not on center stage as much and being so much in that role and understanding how valuable it is, that kind of helped me in the leadership positions of, oh, I can still have these one-on-one conversations. I can still kind of be the voice in the ear of players, of my assistant coaches when I'm taking more of the leadership role as a head coach. So that kind of is where my base understanding has come from, is that background, taking a bit of the guide on the side space, as well as my teaching background. That has been something of like flipping the classroom is a popular term in like pedagogy, has been for a few years, of instead of being that person up front, like how can we flip the classroom, flip the court so that the players take more center stage and have more ownership. So I've loved it and I'm excited to talk more about it.
Yeah, you said two things that are really good. So one, you said the guide on the side. So if you listen to last or this bonus episode that we had with JP Nurbin announcing our membership platform, TOC Coach, which is for individual coaches and athletic programs, whether you're an athletic department or a club program, we're providing support, membership, community courses on how to be a better leader and culture builder. And in that episode, Tyler said, instead of being a sage on the stage, be a guide on the side. And then you shared something about flipping the classroom, which I think that is why some of the best coaches are high school coaches, because they have the educational background that a lot of maybe college or professional coaches don't have. So they have a different perspective. And we use the term student-centered classroom. And that's the way to flip the classroom, is make the student the centered and you become the guide on the side. So I went through this transformation as a head coach as far as making it more of a player-led program instead of a coach-led program. And when coaches that we work with or we're looking in the community, to me, there's so many, we just call them problems or issues or things that arise during the season. And I feel like a lot of these things could be, we could proactively eliminate these things or just minimize the damage that these things have on our program and our team and our season by leading more of a player-led program and opening up space for our players to have more ownership and be more invested. Because at the end of the day, the program is bigger than you. Like if you quit, if you're fired tomorrow, coaches listening, the program would go on. It might be different, but there would still be a program there in place. So Claire, if we're going to move away from a coach-led program and be more of a player-led program, what does that look like? What are some ways that you would implement a player-led program?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is giving players a voice. So the first suggestion I would have to make that happen or leave room for that to happen is something I mentioned before. I'll double down on it anytime, any day, is the power of pauses, like a powerful pause and just allowing players the time to think and actually expecting a response from them is really, really important. I know for myself, like I need a second to think through an answer, to process things, whether that's like when I'm doing my work, when I've been in school, when somebody shares something new with me in a relationship, in a coaching setting, it takes my brain a second. And when there's a quick response required, yes, that's important in games. Like, there's not always that time for it. But if you're training a player-led program and if you're in practice and you want engagement, there's going to be that time period of adjustment, of learning, where they need to get used to actually providing an answer and not just allowing the captain, allowing the most outgoing player, allowing the loudest, smartest, quickest person to respond. Of like, all right, whether that's in film and you literally give them 30 seconds to digest the clip, write something down, those pauses and that opportunity to think and then speak can really facilitate more conversation.
Yeah, powerful pause. So that was probably prefaced by a question, if I had to guess. So that was going to be one of mine, like lead with questions. I think, you know, I mentioned as a head coach, our what's hard is resisting the urge to fix everything. So if you see something, my team is not doing X, Y, or Z, instead of just going in there and fixing it and telling them exactly what you wanted them to do, maybe frame that with a question. It's like, okay, what are we currently, you know, let's say let's say our ball screen coverage is lacking. You know, you could ask a question like, hey, what are we trying to accomplish in our ball screen coverage? And that's going to take a powerful pause, right? Because your players probably haven't thought about that way. Or when we're installing a ball screen, you might ask your players, hey, why is the ball screen the most common action in basketball? Instead of just telling them, like, have them like really think about those things, evaluate it. Because if they arrive at any conclusion, whether it's ball screen coverage or whatever it is, effort, a certain concept, it's going to be internalized more with them because they've had time to think about it. They've arrived at the answer themselves. It's the same way if we make the comparison to the classroom. It's like why the kids actually do the work. They either have homework or classwork, and we don't just get up on the whiteboard and show them how to do it. They actually have to do the work. So I love that powerful pause, ask questions, and actually leave space for them to answer. Instead of, I've seen this a lot and I've been guilty of, it's like we ask a question, we wait a second, and then we just give them the answer anyway.
We feel smart answering questions.
That's right. And you said something really good too, is usually it's the loudest person, it's the loudest player, it's the team leaders, it's the senior. Here's a way that we can avoid that, but also open up space and get a pulse for the entire team. And then I think anytime you get your players connecting, just like peer to peer, it normalizes them giving feedback and communicating with each other, which has a whole lot of ripple effect too, is give them space to talk in groups of three. So if you do have a question, like a lot of coaches will come with a thought of the day. And a lot of times that is coach led. It's like, what do I want my players to do better today? Well, let's make that the quote of the day or the thought of the day. Instead of just you presenting first on what this thought of the day or quote of the day means, give them some space, break up in the group of threes. How does this land for you? And come back. And then the most vocal leaders might share, hey, Claire said this, or you just open up space for anybody to share. But I feel like if they share in a small group, at least everybody starts to talk and it becomes more normal.
I think your point there really speaks to the need for psychological safety. And I think that's essential to have a player-led program, is like if you are taking the stage all the time, if they do not feel comfortable, if you haven't empowered all those voices, then it will continue to be a coach-led program. A couple things, I think small groups are huge for psychological safety. They can kind of gain that confidence. There's less pressure. They're not in front of a group. A couple other options for that is even just like closing your eyes. So say we're going to do one of our ratings, right? Like, what effort have you been giving on a scale of 1 to 4? You know, how do you feel like your understanding of this concept is? Thumbs up, thumbs down. We already tell coaches to ask those questions, but if you think there's going to be some peer pressure, some sway, some dishonest answers up front, like just close your eyes, thumbs up, thumbs down. If you understand that concept, like takes a bit of the pressure off as a starting point. I found whiteboards as well really helpful. Again, learning this from teaching, that there's just a psychological component that it is a non-permanent surface where players can write down their answer in a way that, oh, I could erase this. I can restart without the silly shame of like, oh no, I have to cross this out, or I wrote this in pen, or I really committed to this answer, whatever that is. Like I know as a perfectionist, I definitely felt that like, okay, if I wrote down an answer, if I drew out a play and then it was wrong and I had to scratch it out, the whole page is ruined. Like I wanted to throw it out. I wanted to restart. Like that was my own internal thing, but a coach could have supported that by providing little whiteboards, working in small groups on a whiteboard. So yeah, small groups, close the eyes, use whiteboards. All of these things kind of empower and like encourage more confidence, build more confidence in players.
I like the close the eyes thing because any, you know, I'm big on thumbs down, thumbs to the side, thumbs up, and you always get the look around, you know? Yeah, like I had a two, but everybody else has a three, so I'm going to go three, right? We can all be influenced that way. And a lot of times we're just using feedback as like measurement is feedback. So, hey, how would we rate our rebounding right now on a scale of one, two, or three, or just thumbs up, thumbs down, like just make it binary, right? And just that alone is a way to communicate to your team that, hey, maybe we are like really, really rebounding at a really high clip, and we want to celebrate that and highlight that, or maybe we're not. Let's make sure to spotlight that. And a way, that's one way to be a guide on the side. And to go even further with that, then I would, let's use rebounding as the example. Let's say it's a thumbs down. We're missing blockouts. We're not being physical. Offense is dominating, whatever it is. One, we could highlight offensive rebounding, but the other way for defensive rebounding and to have players more invested and more player led is instead of just telling them, again, fixing our rebounding, have them tell you what's one thing that we could focus on to make our rebounding better. So huddle up. Maybe it's your leaders, your captains, however you formulate your team. Claire mentioned the power of small groups. Maybe it's getting groups of three. You have 30 seconds to come up with one way or something in regards to rebounding that we're going to focus on when we break this huddle. And that's the only thing you as coaches would concentrate on is like, let's say they break that huddle, they share some ideas, right? They lock in on, we've got to be more physical. Well, coaches, the only thing that you're going to coach is physicality and rebounding. And again, that's just kind of how we can share that and make it a little bit more player led. Well, it doesn't have to be all player led and it shouldn't be all coach led. You as the coach, you're identifying rebounding's got to get better. Let the players figure out what they want to focus on, because even in, let's say physicality wasn't the quote unquote right answer, maybe that wasn't the root cause that you identified, it probably doesn't matter. We're spotlighting rebounding. They came up with something to fix it, so they'll take more ownership and making it better.
I think that's such an underrated part of the player-led program is actually adjusting once you get the feedback. I think a lot of coaches stop after, oh, well, I'm going to ask them for feedback or I'm going to give them a voice and then don't do anything with it. And that's like, I've been there. I'm like, cool, I'm going to ask, but I already have a plan in place. So that's that next step of them feeling valued and feeling heard and being more willing to share in those situations is, oh, coach actually did something with that information, whether it's focusing on what they want to focus on, or it's you actually speaking to answers from a player survey and bringing that up, or, you know, based on if they understand a concept or not, hey, because of what you said, we're going to spend an extra 5 minutes on that drill. Like you are adjusting to them. They are, you are the coach that they need, which I think you speak to a lot and really, really well, but yeah, pretty essential to actually follow through on the,
yeah. You said something there too that I don't know if it was intentional or maybe I just kind of like took what you said and made like this assumption, but even saying like, okay, this is the one thing y'all want to focus on. Do we need a drill? Like, do we need to hold some space to work on that real fast? Or do you think we can go straight to the game? Like, I think that's a cool little, you know, to show that like, hey, whatever you're saying is really important that we're willing to adjust practice. And really good point on, okay, whatever you break the huddle on is you probably need to focus on it, because we've all like, picture yourself as a coach. rebounding's not where you want it to be. We stop, we talk about it. And then the next play, you're talking about the angle of the ball screen or shot selection or our on-ball defense is poor. I always think of like if you're working with a player and maybe you're working on like shooting or something and you give some feedback on their footprint. It's like, well, hey, like, what if we made this adjustment with your feet? Oh, well, now your elbow's doing this. And then your hand's not underneath the ball. And then, you know, your momentum's going away from the basket. It's like, hey, if you just gave them one thing to lock in on, it's probably going to get significantly better than chasing, you know, so many rabbits that you catch none. So, yeah, I love being that that laser focused in there.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Agreed. I wanted to circle back for a second to the questions piece. Which I think starts it all. If you're not asking any questions, then hard to get feedback, hard to have voices from other people. I know some coaches have asked us, well, like, what questions do I ask? Again, asking questions is step one. What kind of questions are you asking might be step two. And I know a common one for coaches is like, why did you do that? And it can come from an aggressive place, a frustrated place, but it can also come from a very like caring, I actually just want to know, you know, why did you make that decision? But I think some reframes on that question to get the answer or less of the like visceral reaction from a player of like, why did you do that? Even if you say it with an uptone and a smile, are what did you see? Right? It's not yes or no questions. It's open-ended questions. There's usually a little bit less of the why, which can bring up some defensiveness. So what did you see on that last rep? Or if you do it before rep, what are you seeing right now? How did that feel? Right? Like if it felt smooth to them, that may mean, oh, that was a good read. Or if it felt hard or if it felt confusing, like the feelings can speak to something that can create more conversation. What did you see? How did that feel? Or what's another option that you had in that situation? So as saying, you're not really saying whether what they did was right or wrong, but you're trying to open their eyes to other options or seeing if they even knew, right? Then understanding that the answer to any of those questions could be from them, I don't know, or I wasn't looking at that, which then just leads to more of that feedback, more of those conversations, more of their critical thinking and voice being heard. So those are some ideas. What did you see? How did that feel? What's another option you had in that situation?
Yeah, the common theme there is change the why to what, right? Because like you said, why, you have a tendency to be defensive there. Okay, really good. I think also a different question would be just like check for understanding. So, hey, Claire, when you get the ball in the middle, what's your next action or where are your eyes going there? That might be a good place for you to figure out like, hey, what do they know? And then what should we do next? Like identify some root causes there, check for understanding and help develop your plan going forward. All right. I'm going to share one around core values, and I'm big on co-creating culture with your team. I think that is the number one way that you can build a player-led program and create some investment and some ownership with your players. And this is a cool one that I heard. I've only done this once and actually went really, really well. I probably should do it more, but as coaches, most coaches want to have their own core values. And I actually think that that's a great place to start is like, what is really important to you? Like what do you say a lot? What do you, you know, are you a hardworking program? I think a lot of times coaches don't understand or don't have a clear grasp or awareness of what their actual personal core values are and how that can impact their program. So whatever your personal core values are, I would say use that with your program, but here's how you co-create it with your team is Claire, I'll put you on the spot here. Give me a core value that you might use with a team or that's commonly used with a team.
Community or connection.
Perfect. So connection. We'll go around the room and I might have the definition of the value of community or connection. Like I might want it to be like, gosh, like we're really selfless. We share the ball a lot. We sacrifice for the greater good, whatever that is. But we might go around the room and just say, all right, what does that mean to you? And how are you going to live that out this season? So for a certain player, that might be, off the court is like connection with their teammate. That means they're going to, you know, lead some group activities or connection on the court. It might be somebody that really struggles to communicate. So connection to them means they're going to be a really good communicator this year. And if everybody can kind of internalize that core value and define exactly what it means for them, what the challenge is for them, but how they can use that to benefit the team, I think that's a really cool way to co-create your culture around your core values.
Yeah, I think that the authenticity piece that that brings out makes it stick a lot more. It's sure the first step in creating something is just to follow, or like to execute something is to mimic another or imitate a role model or just do what your coach says. But when it truly really ingrains within you or within a group, it's because you're kind of living it out how it feels to you and how it makes sense to your brain, to your heart, to your body. That's a lot easier to maintain, sustain, and be excited about.
Yeah, I've got here's another one in practice that I've actually learned from Savvy. So, Claire, you might be able to speak on this one even better than me. But when I think of player-led program, we want our players to give feedback to each other and care about the standard, right? And care about their teammates' effort and their teammate getting better. So I'll actually give you two. One is what I learned with Savvy is anything you do with partners, make it a group of three. And that third person is observing. And a communication framework that I've used in the past has been earn, encouragement, affirm, remind, and notify. So encouragement might be like a positive statement before, like, hey, let's go, let's work hard. Affirmation would be a positive statement after, like, Claire, you are really working hard. I saw you in a stance, you locked up the ball, multiple efforts, all those things. You're kind of rewarding the behavior, but that's typically after. And then reminders would be, informing your teammate of what would you want them to do, right? Like what would, so for instance, like, hey, Claire, make sure you're in a stance or make sure you're locking the ball, right? That would help Claire be more successful. And then a notification would be after, like, hey, Claire, I noticed your foot angle, or I noticed you weren't sitting on the right hand in that game, right? And that's why you struggled to lock the ball. So a lot of times notifications don't have to have tone. It doesn't have to be like a fix it. It's just, hey, Claire, I noticed that you made that adjustment and really started locking the ball when you move from the center of the offensive player more to the right hand. And that's just going to help her internalize, but it also normalizes the feedback and keeps our players on the side locked in. I think I said I was going to share two, but I went long there, so I'm not going to share the second one.
You can circle back to it. This might be related. I'll fit one of my suggestions into how it's related to that, because I think we're talking about how to develop a player-led program. The first thing you need to do, well, I mean, is commit to that, yes. Then there needs to be opportunities. We've shared some ways that you can create opportunities for a player-led program, right? The small groups, having these pauses, asking questions, those are opportunities. Whereas then the earn, like having a framework, adds to that system. So just giving an opportunity doesn't mean it's going to happen. They don't know how to do it yet. Like being a player-led program, it is a skill. The communication, the comfortability, the confidence, the language, all of those things need to be taught. So you need the opportunity to use it, but then the framework takes that next step of actually being able to implement it and really scaffold on that learning. Another piece that I think can help add to this system that's going to develop player-led is the environment. So it's like, okay, you have the opportunity. You have some frameworks in place to help them develop those skills. The environment can really help sustain that. So what I mean by that is if you really, truly don't want to be the sage on the stage with you in the center, you can physically make that happen as well. So whether that's standing in a circle where there's no actual center, anyone who is speaking is kind of at the center of attention at any point. In film, in classroom sessions, if you're sitting in rows, if that's a mandatory thing, okay, can you group those rows into groups of three so that it's the conversation is facilitated? If possible, even better, do you have tables? Do you have a circle table? Do you have people where they're facing each other being conducive to conversation? In drills, do you have a location where players are standing together where they're expected to communicate, or when they go off, it is easier to facilitate conversation, whether that's they go see an assistant coach or they stand together on the baseline. I know I've seen practices where the players are off and they're just spread out individually. And so again, that doesn't give the opportunity or the system for them to practice, like giving each other feedback on the sideline. Whereas if it's a standard, it's an expectation that when you come off, you all stand directly under the hoop. You must be like touching each other, and then you can split off once you've had that debrief. So the environment can really make or break whether you're having these conversations and empowering the player voices.
Yeah, that's an incredible amount of attention to detail that I think makes the big, I mean, that's, we talk about the art of coaching, and that's like really what I'm passionate about. Like, that's really, really good. Cause sometimes, or really most of the time, when I think of shaping the environment, my mind just goes to like constraints. Hey, our tables are going to be a circle, or we're going to sit this way, or we're going to make, oftentimes like, how you lay out your locker room or team room is really important. So, like eliminating cliques, like we want everybody to, you as the head coach, if you want all your team to, I call them like collisions, we just want as many collisions as possible. It's like these small conversations and touch points, then you've got to shape that. And I think, I mean, there's a million ways to create a player led program. As a coach, if you can implement one or two of these, I think it's going to make a big difference. And then it's like anything, like once you get started, you'll see it through a whole nother lens of like, oh, well, that worked really well. We could probably change how we do this and that. And the possibilities are endless. Yeah. Plus ones.
Okay. You said clicks, and I have to say this because it's subtle, right? And a little thing can go a long way. I had this when I was coaching high school girls, and there was a team where there was definitely some clicks. They'd come into practice, and it was a regular high school gym, right? And the bleachers were out, and you'd have three girls sit over here, three girls sit over there. And we noticed that it was becoming an issue. It was the same people hanging out with the same people, spread out, talking about each other at times. And so we pushed in all of the bleachers except one. So it's like, when you come in, there is this place to sit. Like, all 12 of you must be getting ready in this area. It limited the external factors and literally brought them together. So you talk about connectedness or connection as a value. Like, if we're going to live that out, that is a small environmental change that helped us kind of turn around. How are we communicating? How are we connecting in an intentional way? That wasn't some big thing that we talked about. It's just like, oh, that's the space that's for you now. You're going to use it, and it's going to kind of turn the tide.
Yeah, I like that too. Just with a lot of things, I feel coaches feel compelled to like make these big announcements on things like, hey, we're going to be a player-led program, or we're making this change to the locker room. Like, you don't even have to do that. Like, just, you are a shaper of the environment. A lot of people use the analogy or the comparison of a gardener, where if a plant is not growing, you don't yell at the plant, you just shape the environment. You know, we got to change the soil. We might need to add water or water it less. So just experiment with these different things and just notice, be in tune, notice the difference that it's making in your program. And I think, like anything, these are just seeds that you're planting, and over time you'll see the results or the compound interest that all comes with it. So this is good. Like I said, coaches, if you implement one or two of these, I think you'll see a big difference. And we'd love to hear which one that you choose to implement, which one resonates the most with you, or maybe which one would be the most challenging. And a great place to engage with us is in our community. We have a free trial on at Savvy Coach or Savvy Basketball. So feel free to hop in. You get 7 days for free. If you want to go deeper into these topics or any of our other Savvy systems, I'm running a live training on our new offensive course that's coming out. It's a new system where we combine drive and space and race and space into what we call RDS, race it, drive it, space it. It's been a lot of fun to build this with the Savvy team. Tyler is also taking us through a lock left course that Claire and Tyler completely audited, redone. So lots of new stuff in there. And I did mention our partnership with TOC. If you're interested in the leadership and culture aspect, which we talk about, obviously these things in Savvy Basketball, but even more so in TOC Coach. So if this is your area of focus, is this where you want to dive into, feel free to visit us at TOC Coach as well.
I love it. We're going to, it's almost season time.
That's right.
about to get real for a lot of our members, a lot of our wider community. And it just hypes me up to be able to support. You know, we are taking the feedback. We're trying to walk the walk, right, of being a player-led, coach-led, I guess. This is reverse, but our players, the savvy players, are really the coaches in our community. And we want your feedback, and we want to support you. And that's a team effort. So, yeah, get on into the community, and we can talk every single day and support you through implementing these things with your program to transform.
All right. Let's have a great start to our season. Claire, thanks for visiting. Always a pleasure. And we'll see you soon. Stay savvy.
Stay savvy.